What's happening? Welcome to the Bitcoin panel. I wish I had like my sound effects and music, but we're here. It's Friday. We're going to be talking Bitcoin, and thanks for joining us. Don't forget to subscribe to the channel and all that, because I always forget to say that. So yeah, that's great. So anyway, on this week's Bitcoin panel, we have Cody and AC. Welcome, guys.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah. So we're just going to hang out and definitely say hi in chat. We're streaming on all to YouTube, Rumble, Zap.stream. And sorry. But yeah, so the topic for today's panel is pretty simple to start with. Of course, the conversation can go anywhere, but I wanted to start with sort of like the Bitcoiner's journey. You know, I even had I have a friend who is just getting into Bitcoin. And actually, maybe we could start with this question, because he's getting into Bitcoin. He wants to know more. He's been learning. You know, I went to a conference about 2.5 months ago, and I was doing my show, and I was telling him about Bitcoin, and he's like, "Oh, really? Uh-huh." And then now he's kind of into it. And so today we're going to talk about the Bitcoiner's learning curve and the growth curve and the evolution, going from a complete knowing nothing about Bitcoin to maybe owning it and being a Bitcoin maximalist. But I was like, he basically asked, how can I buy Bitcoin? And I said, well, you know, you could just get something like the Strike app and just connect your bank account and do it. And he went to sign up, and they asked him for like his bank login information. And I thought that, I mean, I think you have to let them log into your bank, right, to pull the money out. So he was a little freaked out by that. So AC, what do you think about the situation?
To be honest, I don't remember having to connect my bank to Strike.
Well, if you want to deposit USD from your bank, then I believe you have to connect your bank. Because I did that like a couple of weeks ago. I did this.
Yeah, it's been a while since I set up my Strike account, so I don't remember connecting a bank account. I thought that you could just use a routing number and account number, and then it would treat it like an ACH. But to be honest, yeah, I don't remember. And I think that that's probably one of the hesitations for some folks is, you know, connecting their bank account and going through some of that KYC to get Bitcoin in the very beginning. But at this point, with on-ramps and off-ramps from fiat, just looking at what Cody said, with fiat on-ramps and off-ramps, it's unfortunately one of the only ways to onboard people besides the non-KYC routes like BISC or HODL or something like that.
Right, yeah. Because I also brought up Coinbase. Like Coinbase, you know, to bring money over from your bank account, you have to connect it. But I think it connects through that app. It's called Plaid, is it? Where yeah. You sort of log into that and then they connect and
something like that. It's been a long, long time since I touched Coinbase.
Yeah. So anyway, I think this is probably, it's definitely a good example of the fact that we're so early that it's a little difficult to just buy Bitcoin. Like it should be easy, right? Anybody within 5 minutes should be able to do it. Why not? Well, the reason is because we're still operating under the legacy financial system. And the other thing is go ahead.
I'll argue with you on that piece, because if you look at like PayPal, Cash App, Venmo, Zelle, people don't hesitate to install those applications and utilize those applications, and they go through the exact same process, but it keeps them, you know, trapped within fiat. And so I often would question, why are you willing to do that when you set up Venmo, but you're not willing to do that when you set up Strike?
That was my question, and that's what I was just about to say, is that just because it's Bitcoin, people are a lot more hesitant and fearful. It's like you said, you'll give Venmo and all these other things access to your bank account, but when it comes to Strike, oh, I don't know. I mean, again, I'm not saying it's not normal. It's a normal trepidation for new people, I think. So I'm not, you know, making fun of my friend or anything, but it's just, it's not easy. But anyway, that's where we are in Bitcoin right now. Everything is not quite easy. And because of all the media FUD, everyone thinks that, you know, Bitcoin's for scammers. I mean, you know, I know guys who, and it's, again, nothing against them, but like, they kind of have to talk it over with their wife. And then, of course, their wife is five steps behind them in knowledge and doesn't, still believes all the media hype that Bitcoin is for scammers and drug dealers and right?
Yeah, yeah. I think that's one piece. The other thing that I talk to folks about is trying to draw an analogy that might resonate with them. And for folks that are older or who remember, like, dial-up internet, you know, connecting to the internet in the 90s was far more difficult than it is today. And then, like, utilizing the transition from a feature phone to a smartphone and the capabilities that it provides. Sure, there was a learning curve associated with getting that first iPhone in 2007 or 2008, but eventually, I mean, it got adopted by everyone. And that's kind of the same way that I see Bitcoin. Saifedean talks about Bitcoin as being, you know, financial gunpowder, and eventually everyone is going to adopt it. And those who don't are going to be victims of it. And I always think about that when people are hesitant to even consider Bitcoin, because they are at the very beginning of this revolution. They just don't know it yet.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel for the new people, like even family members. It's like, nothing is easy. Everything is, you know, even buying some hardware wallets for my, you know, nieces and nephews. It's like, it's just not easy. Yeah. BTC Moon guy says fiat is dead, in my opinion. Yeah. It's the way I think of it is, it's like, it's dying in slow motion, right? It's like falling to the ground. It's dead, but it's still upright, and it's going to take, I don't know how long to actually fall to the ground and so we can bury it. I don't know.
Yeah. But back to your comment, I think almost anything that is worthwhile in life is not easy. If it were easy, everyone would do it. If it's difficult, that's when the magic starts to happen, because not everyone's going to take that next step and that next step to try to figure something out that's difficult. And they'll just wait until there's an easy button, which exists today in the ETF or in MicroStrategy. And even in those two cases, people are still believing the FUD and not willing to, you know, make a small, minuscule 1% allocation, even though it's probably going to benefit them in the long term.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, BTC Moon guy says we're winning. Yeah, I believe it. So welcome, everybody. We're hanging out in the Bitcoin panel. Here we are. We're on Zap.stream. Oh, and now it's... Yeah, I'm going to mute it. So I'm trying to monitor comments. So if you're watching, comment, say hi. Yeah, imagine going down with the fiat ship. Well, unfortunately, there's going to be a lot of people that end up in a bad place, right? Right, AC?
Yeah, there's a lifeline that exists. People just don't know about it yet.
Yeah, but they're going to know more when I show up at BitBlock Boom with my new laminate. Oh, yeah, baby. With the QR code. Oh, yeah, scan it. Okay. Yeah, I even have a family in Texas that I might see. And let me know how you feel about this, AC. Like, I mentioned Bitcoin to certain people, and I'm sensitive enough that I don't puke on them, right? I don't try to talk them into it. I don't do any of that. I'll just gently mention things, and if they have questions, I'll answer, but I don't try to go too hard. But it's like, when you drop so many hints and the person doesn't respond, it's like, after a while, it's like, all right, well, then I guess there's nothing to talk about with that.
Yeah, you know, I actually don't proactively try to orange pill no coiners immediately. I think it's important to kind of figure out where people are and what their pain points are and what their level of interest is in certain topics. And because once you understand where they are, you can start to develop a plan on, you know, hey, what can I talk to them about that might resonate with them? But you're right. If you just start puking Bitcoin on people, they're probably going to shut down and not hear what you're really saying. But if you talk about, you know, the price of goods or, you know, devaluation, that's something that I think resonates with a lot of people, especially as inflation goes up and the cost of goods continues to go up. And, you know, their paychecks aren't going as far as they used to.
Right. Well, welcome to 142857. Yeah, baby. Greetings. Yes. Oh, thank you for the compliment. Yeah. And I guess you're on, yeah, Rumble. So thanks for watching on Rumble. You know, it's funny. Rumble is like, I'm growing my show on YouTube and Rumble and Noster, but Noster is so new. Rumble is also very new. So I'm growing the most on YouTube, which isn't surprising, but I'm always trying to focus, like, I'm trying to corral people to Rumble because I just have a feeling one of these days I'm going to talk about something on YouTube that gets my channel banned or something. And that won't happen on Rumble. But I mean, on YouTube, I'm up to like 620 subscribers. On Rumble, I'm at 39. It's like, it's just kind of strange, but it's also early for me. So thanks for your wishes there. AC, do you find that most people you talk to, when you mention inflation, do they understand what inflation really is and how bad it is?
No, I don't think that people really understand what inflation is. They understand that the cost of goods goes up, but they don't necessarily understand why. And to be honest, I don't know that I fully understand it. I mean, I'm a student of Bitcoin, just like everyone else.
Yeah.
And so I don't think that they necessarily get it. But there are ways to kind of approach that conversation, especially when, and you know, a lot of times people will make fun of the meme culture, but I think there's also a benefit in education because a lot of times a meme can say something that would take 100 or 1,000 words, and it's just a picture.
Totally. All right. If any of you guys watching have any questions for AC, as he just said, he's the expert in Bitcoin. I'm kidding. But yeah, so seriously, ask your questions today. Yeah, I think the thing about inflation is if everything got more expensive, but everybody's paycheck grew at the same rate, then it wouldn't really matter. Like all the numbers would go up. But the problem is when your paycheck stays the same, and then everything you want to buy goes up tremendously. And then you're like, I can't afford this and that and food. And so you're right. I think that's the pinch that'll get people to even think about inflation.
Yeah. And if I was listening to Mark Moss this morning on what Bitcoin did, and he had something that really I found interesting and I'm still kind of nugging on and thinking about. But he said that, poor people think the game is rigged. Rich people know the game is rigged and figure out how to play the game. And so I think that we need to find where people are at their stage in their life and help them cross that bridge. If they think the game is rigged, but they do nothing about it, then Bitcoiners often know the game is rigged and have a general understanding of why it is rigged and how to play the game. And that's a big delta between, you know, Bitcoiners and no-coiners. And I think that that's part of, you know, that process of education and study and learning is, okay, the game is rigged. These are the rules. This is the model that has been established by rich people in the past and owning hard assets. How do we educate people so that they also know how to play the game?
Yeah, and then play the legacy game, because we still have to play that game, obviously, but also switch games. Switch over to the Bitcoin game, which is a whole... I wouldn't even call it a game. It's just because of the nature of Bitcoin, you can't abuse it. You can't print more of it. Like, that's obviously, you agree with that, right?
Yeah. And I think it goes back to, you know, the discussion we had with Isabella a couple weeks ago on hyper Bitcoinization and you know, do we think that hyper-Bitcoinization is going to take place in the next few years, decades in our lifetime, or in, you know, like the children's lifetimes? Because depending on when that takes place is going to dictate which games you have to play and which rules you have to play by. If, for example, hyper-Bitcoinization doesn't take place for 50 years, those 50 years you're going to continue to have to play the fiat game and hard assets and, you know, not keeping money, the melting ice cube, in a savings account or a bank, but move it over to hard assets that are going to appreciate commensurate or maybe even outperform inflation. And so I think that that's part of the equation that people need to think about.
Right. And those assets you're talking about are, I mean, real estate, probably gold. Are those two of them?
Yeah. I mean, if we look at how people, you know, wealthy people in the past have gone through the process of wealth preservation, it's not through savings. It's real estate, stocks, equities, bonds, potentially art or collectibles, things that are going to appreciate over time versus, you know, the savings account, that the purchasing power of that dollar that's in the savings account continues to decrease as, again, we talk about monetary debasement and we talk about inflation going up and the cost of goods going up.
Right. So yeah, this on Rumble, it's Joe, Dr. KMF from YouTube, sometimes watches on YouTube, but it's trying to be more on Rumble. Appreciate that. But of course, don't forget, everyone can watch wherever they want, but YouTube is not good. Rumble much better, but I'm still waiting, you know, when we get a really good Noster app. Meaning, there are some. Like, for instance, every day I put my videos on flare.pub. That's a Noster. It's like YouTube on Noster. And to upload videos, you have to pay some sats. Like, for, I think it's like if you pay 10,000 sats, you get like, is it a gigabyte of, or 2 gigabytes of upload or something? Basically, you're just paying a little. It's not that much. But it's great. I love flare.pub. But again, there's so few people there. Joe says he needs to learn more about Lightning and how to send and receive and support folks to also use it. Yeah, AC, what do you think about in terms of using Lightning? Is the app the most important thing? Like, can an app make it easy or hard, or is there another consideration?
Yeah, I think, you know, we've talked about this in the past too, and I'll kind of steal something that Jack Mahler says is, you know, the protocol has been established. Whoever builds the best UI UX is going to win in that game. I love Lightning. I used it this morning to pay an invoice for some Bitcoin swag that I'll be picking up next month in person down in Dallas. And so I think that, there's still some hurdles, usability hurdles associated with Lightning, depending on which application. And we talked about it in the past too, understanding how the application provides inbound and outbound liquidity. You know, most people aren't going to figure that out, and they're going to wonder why they continuously pay fees. And that's why I always say, hey, once you start studying Bitcoin, we're so early, this is going to probably be like a lifelong journey of constant study. And, you know, unfortunately, a lot of people aren't willing to invest that amount of time over the course of potentially years to be able to study Bitcoin and study Lightning and whatever comes next.
Yeah, it's just going to take time to play out. That's why one of the other things I like about Bitcoin culture is this, like you see, people on Noster talking about like fiat food, meaning like garbage food, and then there's good food, and it just like putting that word fiat next to anything that's just garbage is very interesting, and it really makes sense when you zoom out, because you know we're all, I mean, Bitcoin, we know how great Bitcoin is, right? The fact that we have Bitcoin is such a blessing. However, we have so many other blessings in our lives, right? And we have so many other so much more potential and so much more creativity, and Bitcoin can help with all that for sure. But at the same time, there's all these other areas of life to focus on, to grow in, to take responsibility with, and to live your best life, right?
Yeah, yeah. And you know, it's funny. It's funny to see the evolution of fiat as a word and how it's kind of turned into a four-letter word. I remember when the Malmy emails came out, and initially there was speculation on, hey, does this provide any information, additional information on who Satoshi Nakamoto was? And again, I really like Jack Mahler's take on it. And he said, that's so fiat of you to be trying to figure this out. He gave the world one of the best gifts it's ever been given. And the only thing that he ever asked was to stay anonymous. And we should respect his wishes, because we're all beneficiaries of the gift that he gave, and that's Bitcoin. And so, yeah, the evolution of the word fiat from what I used to call something like faith. Fiat is just missing the H, because you have faith and trust in the government who created that currency, and you trust that they're always going to back it. But now it's kind of evolved into this four-letter word for things that are, you know, inferior or subpar.
Right. All right, question for everyone watching. How confident are you in Bitcoin? How confident are you that it's going to continue to grow and be the store of value that it seems to be? So let's think about it this way. If you had to take all your money and all your possessions and put it into Bitcoin, that would be 100% confidence in Bitcoin. How confident are you? Put it in the chat. What percentage? 60%, 75%? And here's Johnny. He's home. Oh, yeah. What's up, Johnny B? All right. Thanks, man. Yeah, Johnny B, how confident are you in Bitcoin? And here's why I'm bringing it up. Because we all start at like 2% confidence, and it grows over time. So AC, where... Oh, Johnny B's 100. Oh, yeah. He's all in. Let's go. AC, where would you say you are now, and where did you start, maybe?
Well, I think confidence is a function of understanding, education, and knowledge. Nobody walks into Bitcoin 100% confident that it is going to continuously accumulate and grow and appreciate over time, especially folks who've been through multiple cycles, because, you know, your first bear market is pretty challenging, depending on what your level of exposure was. And so I think confidence continues to grow the more you study and learn about Bitcoin and try to avoid the traps of different shitcoins. I think I've mentioned this in the past on the show before. Like, a lot of people will look at Bitcoin like today and say, well, it's 70,000. I can't afford Bitcoin. Unbeknownst to them that's a function of unit bias, because they don't actually have to buy one whole Bitcoin right away. You know, they can DCA in and stack sats, so to speak. But they look at it and like, I can't afford Bitcoin, so what's the next best thing? You know? And that kind of leads people down the shitcoin rabbit hole. And one of those that I used to think everybody has to learn that lesson, that painful lesson on their own. But I'm starting to run into more and more people who actually never went down the shitcoin rabbit hole, started off in Bitcoin and stayed Bitcoin only. And I think that's a function of education and timing as well. You know, people who start off at the depths and the bowels of a bear market are probably the ones that start with Bitcoin and stick with Bitcoin. People who enter the space during a bull run and they see, you know, some stupid shitcoin go 100x or 1000x over the course of a couple of days, Those are the people that eventually get wrecked in a bear market.
Totally. Joe is 75% right now because there are funds in ETF now that he can't yet switch to self-custody until he's 55, a year away. Yep, that's good. I'd say my confidence is very high. I don't know if it's 100 yet, meaning I'm real close to 100. The only reason I might not be 100 is because, I mean, there's always uncertainty in life, right? We don't know I mean, there's always something that can happen. BTC Moon guy is above 90. Yeah, greater than 90. And Johnny B said, as he spoke earlier, AC did not fire hose Johnny with information. He picked his interest, and once he was interested in the ETFs, the door's open. Yeah, that's good. That's how it should be, because, like, look, we're just people like us. We're just trying to help people. Like, if you don't want help, that's fine, but, like, this is something pretty serious, and if you want help, I'm here to help, so that's good. And Nick, what's up, Nick? He says, it's not that things are more expensive, it's that the currency is losing value. That's a hard one for most people to grok. That's a, right? Why is that? Is it because we're not, like, okay, since reading the Bitcoin Standard, just that one book, I feel like I understand monetary things and economics much better. So I guess it's because we're not taught properly in school, AC, would you say?
Yeah, I would 100% agree with that. You know, and whether it was by design or by coincidence, I often ask myself, is the reason that we weren't taught this in school was to make it difficult to understand so that the system of manipulation could continue to exist and it would perpetuate that signal because people didn't understand it. I don't know if that was by design or by coincidence. And that's why, you know, Isabella talked about it when she was on the show. I really like what, you know, Mi Primero Bitcoin is doing down in El Salvador and really all over the globe in teaching Bitcoin education to kids, because I think that the next generation are going to be the true beneficiaries of Bitcoin, and it's important for them to understand it now and at a very young age so it becomes second nature to them in the future. We didn't have that benefit. I mean, ask 100 people walking down the street what they think monetary debasement means, or ask them, what is inflation? What is 2% inflation? The goal of 2%, what does that really mean? And, you know, we're sticky at 3%, 3.5% now. What does that mean? And I'm willing to bet, you know, 99 out of 100 wouldn't be able to answer just those two or three questions.
Totally. Which is, in a way, it's so weird because, I mean, I'm not going to say money's the most important thing in life, but if you keep getting screwed over with your money, like if you just keep getting robbed from your whole life, that's not good either, right? I mean, how many people live lives where they have to work a job and they're raising a family and they don't have free time to do anything? How many painters or musicians, they want to sit down and play their guitar, but they literally just got home from work and they got to cook dinner for the kids and then they're so tired they go to bed. So, like, the fact that the money system is broken is literally crushing people's souls, like creatively and from the heart. And so this is like the most important thing to teach people.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. You know, both Breedlove and Booth talk about inflation as theft, and a lot of people do as well. And I think that people don't realize that theft isn't just theft of people today. That theft is future generations through inflation and increasing the price of goods, or as Nick put it so eloquently, you know, it's the purchasing power of fiat currencies that continuously goes down due to monetary debasement and inflation. And so what they're really doing is they're stealing time. They're stealing productivity from us today, from our kids tomorrow, and our kids' kids, you know, all the way out into the future until the system is corrected or fixed. And a lot of people, they just accept that, hey, the system is too big, that it can't be fixed. And there's a small percentage of people who are moving towards a Bitcoin standard who actually think differently and think that, you know, there is a possibility with something with absolute scarcity, finite scarcity, programmatically written in the code, never to be changed, as long as, you know, the 20,000 nodes are running around the world, there is a possibility it can be fixed, and that's through something like Bitcoin.
Yeah, and here's BTC Moon Guy says, I'm 100% confident in Bitcoin. Greater than 90% of my investable assets are in Bitcoin. It's hard to be all in 100% at this point, but we will get there. Yeah, it's hard. But apparently Jack Mallers is, he's 100% in, right? Meaning he doesn't have any fiat left. That's what he said anyway.
Yeah, I've come across a couple people that do the same thing. You know, they take their monthly, weekly paycheck, salary, what have you, and they convert it all into Bitcoin. And then when they have expenditures required, if possible, they pay it in Bitcoin via Lightning. And then if not, they convert it back to fiat, because they know that, you know, time in the market is better than timing the market. And so if I can put money, turn that dirty fiat money into Bitcoin and let it appreciate over time, long-term, it's going to have more purchasing power than if I were to put that fiat money into a savings account.
Right. And I heard something recently I wanted to tell you, AC. So I've gotten into watching these videos by Matthew Crater.
Yeah.
So good. And one of them, I think it was from today, he said, is Bitcoin just a mass hallucination? Very good video. But in there, or maybe, I don't even know if it was that video or one of his other ones, he mentioned that Bitcoin, there's a cap of 21 million Bitcoin ever. And he said, and I've heard this from other people before, that, oh, they can just change the code. They can make it 42 million if they want or something. But what Matthew Crater said was, they wouldn't do that. Why would you inflate the thing that you have and cut the value in half? Like, that's literally dumb. So I was like, that's really good to know, to think of it that way, because there's no way anyone would ever vote to increase the supply of Bitcoin. It doesn't serve anyone, right? Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah, and at this point, it's probably not possible. In order to accomplish some, and I didn't see that Bitcoin University video, although I do also follow Matt Crater, but I don't think that that's feasibly possible. That would require, you know, effectively all the nodes to upgrade their software to allow for 42 million Bitcoin. And there are some nodes that are running out there that are on early versions of like Bitcoin Core. And so trying to get all of them to accept that upgrade is probably a non-starter, especially when you take into account that folks that are running a Bitcoin node have a vested interest in Bitcoin. Why would they effectively dox themselves by upgrading to something like that?
Right. Yeah, I thought that was really interesting. Yeah, I mean, today's a slow news day, by the way, and I'm making these videos every day, on this channel, Fractal Bitcoin. And luckily, I don't just cover Bitcoin. I also cover, for context, I cover the fiat nonsense, the major fiat stories that are just ridiculous. And I also cover Nostr a little bit, because Nostr's really awesome. It's the last few days have been pretty slow. Although, if we look at the chart, we can see we're doing something pretty good here, which is we're holding this yellow line is 69K, and we're holding that as support for the last 3 days. That's substantial to some degree. What do you think, AC? You're not a chart guy, though, are you, AC?
We've talked about this in the past. I look at the price. Sometimes I do look at the chart. But also I'm a firm believer that, you know, what Michael Saylor said, all of our models are going to be destroyed. And I think we've talked about that before in the past. And I also think that trying to apply like TradFi technical analysis to something like Bitcoin with a finite supply is kind of a fool's errand. Mm-hmm. Because it's not always going to behave in the way that we think when we look at it from a perspective of like Apple stock or,
right,
you know, Nvidia or something like that. I will look at the chart, but it's not one of those things that necessarily moves the needle for me.
Right. Yeah, and look, and what's interesting now, where we are now on the chart is that, here, I'll just show it again, because once we cruise up past our all-time high, which was, what, 73,835, once we cruise up, we're, like, going into blue ocean. Like, you know what I mean? So even the people who do follow charts, to chart something where it's never gone before, is that's much less reliable. So welcome all the new viewers. Say hi in the chat. Tell us how confident you are in Bitcoin. Yeah, so thanks for hanging out with us on a Friday. This is awesome. If you have any Bitcoin questions, please ask them. You know what? If you have anything you'd like to, questions in terms of, like, what do you feel, and I'm speaking to everybody, what do you feel like you need to learn about Bitcoin? Like, what's the next thing you need to learn? So put that in the chat. What do you need to learn? AC, how about you? What do you want to learn next?
You know, I really enjoy listening to James Lavish and Preston Pish because they have a perspective on inflation, M2 money supply, treasuries, bonds, reverse repos, overnight lending to banks, all of these things that I have, I need to study more. I have somewhat of a grasp. It's probably like noob level. But just listening to them talk, I catch myself taking notes and not understanding everything they say. And so that's an area or a blind spot or a weak point for me that I know that I've got to focus more attention and effort on.
Hmm. Joe says, running a Bitcoin node and Lightning node. Yeah, so what I did is I bought a Start 9 about a year ago. No, not even a year ago. And running a node is easy. Like, literally, I'm not joking, it's like two clicks. It's like, install that, click, and then turn it on, click. And then it had to synchronize with the blockchain. It took less than a day, or maybe a day. And now I have the entire history of the Bitcoin blockchain on my Start 9. So that's an easy way to do that. And as far as a Lightning node, I haven't done that yet. We talked about this last week, because balancing channels and all that stuff, like, I don't know. I don't need to go there yet, and I don't know enough to go there yet, right? So one thing I wanted to learn more about, and I am learning, is how to secure your hardware wallet, how to secure your 12 words or 24 words, and, you know, with the cold card, you have a PIN number, and then you also have two little passphrase words, and I'm like, just revisiting my security on all that. And it's funny though, even talking about this, it seems strange, because even offline, AC, I was going to ask you offline about this kind of stuff, because anyway, I'm studying that because I want to be safe and I want to store things in the proper place and not make any blunders, because there are blunders you can make, right, AC, with holding your own hardware wallet and your seed words, right?
Yeah, like we've also talked about this in the past. You know, this isn't something that you can call customer service on and say, hey, I forgot my password, I need a password reset. Self-custody is a responsibility. And like I mentioned before, I think it's people who are hesitant to self-custody, it's a function of their knowledge. And like I said, knowledge is a function of education. And so people have got to study Bitcoin and self-custody before they take that leap. And then as far as, you know, securing those 24, those 12 words, any pins or passphrases that might be included, the other piece that people also need to devote some attention to is inheritance planning. You know, what happens if you hit your head and there's memory loss involved? You know, are your significant others or family members going to be able to decipher whatever it is you did to secure those words? Or is it now a contribution to all other holders as, you know, lost coins? And so there's a lot to unpack there as far as how to do it. And really, I think there's two avenues. Is either one, people invest the hundreds to thousands of hours to study Bitcoin, or they seek out, you know, an advisor. And there are a number of consulting companies out there who can help jumpstart that journey for folks and point them in directions that they may not have found after 10 or 20 or 50 hours of study. But it is definitely a responsibility. And I don't recommend that people go all in on self-custody right away until they've gone through the process of, you know, backup, recovery, wipe, recover from backup. Again, you know, it can be difficult for folks. It is difficult.
Yeah.
But that's building in the confidence that, hey, you know, I've written down these words correctly and I know how to, you know, recover from a backup. And so I'm now confident that in the event my cult card was destroyed or lost or broken, but I still have this list of 24 words, I can recover that wallet.
Right. BTC Moon Guy says, I went with a multi-sig provider. They have inheritance too. There's a cost, but it's worth it to me. So how does that work, AC? Is that, I mean, maybe you could just describe multi-sig and this and maybe what he's talking about.
Yeah. So yeah, BTC Moon Guy, just reading between the lines, it sounds like you're either with Unchained or Casa for your solution. Both of those are pretty well adopted within the industry. If that is correct, you know, the multi-sig solution that they provide is a 2 of 3 multi-sig. And what that really means is 2 of 3 private keys are required to conduct a transaction out. So the individual or the client has control of 2 of those 3 keys. And then the provider has a 3rd key. And that 3rd private key is there in the event that somebody loses their one of their 2 keys. You know, all is not lost at that point. You can collaborate with whoever the provider is and your 1 key to safely move Bitcoin to a new address. Casa 3 of 5. So I was close.
Okay.
2 of 3, 3 of 5. The other important thing that a lot of people don't talk about with multi-sig is the public keys. In order to recreate that wallet, you need a 3 of 3 on the public keys. And so if you're using somebody like Unchained or Casa, they maintain all 3 private or public keys for you so that that address can be recreated. For folks that are creating their own multi-sig wallet, it's important for them to understand that, you know, they need 3 of 3 public keys, and then they need at least 2 of 2 private keys to conduct the transaction out.
Right. And obviously the reason they do that is because if you just have one key, then someone can steal that and send out the Bitcoin. Whereas if I had one key, someone came to my house and stole it, they still can't, if I have multi-sig, they still can't get to my Bitcoin because they need one of the other keys as well.
Right, right. And so what most people do, and it's like this evolution, again, of education and understanding, most people will go through the process of, you know, storing their initial purchases of sats on a hot wallet on a mobile device or a computer. And then once that becomes significant, they move it to a single sig hardware wallet, air-gapped, offline. And then some people will stop there. There's nothing wrong with that. And then other people will evolve into a 2 of 3 multi-sig, either full self-custody or collaborative custody with an institution like Casa or like Unchained. But like you said earlier, it's important to continuously evaluate, you know, what is your security posture look like? And are there changes to, you know, person's situation, the value or their security model that probably needs to be addressed.
Right. Joe says, I have and recommend Unchained for IRAs, 2 out of 3 multi-sig, so self-custody, really. Yeah. Yeah, the IRA thing. Yeah. What's the other one?
There's a couple. Swan also has a Bitcoin IRA, but they don't allow for a 2 of 3 multi-sig in their IRA. Talking to folks from Swan, their legal team has a different opinion of the McNulty case. And for that reason, they do a collaborative institutional collaborative custody for their Bitcoin IRA over at Swan. Hmm.
Yes, it's important to safely store the derivation path. What is that, AC?
We're getting really in the weeds here.
All right. Well,
but basically, I mean, so in a, let's see here, a hierarchical determination address, so most people will see that as an HD address, you can have a number of different wallets associated with a public key, private key pair, and the derivation path will tell you where within that encryption model is to start either a wallet and or different addresses. And so, you know, if we try to keep this simple, you know, you have a private key. From the private key is a one-way hash to generate the public key. And then it's a one-way hash from a public key to generate addresses. But the derivation path, if you've got the wrong derivation path, you might think that you might plug it into, you know, a wallet. And if you don't have the correct derivation path, then it's going to show zero. And that's part of the multi-sig mapping that if you were in collaborative custody with Unchained, they would maintain on your behalf. And they'll also tell you to back it up yourself. And then it's, if you were to roll your own multi-sig, it's one of the things that you would want to back up. You definitely want to back up. Like I said, is all three public keys, derivation path to recreate the address, and then have at least two of three to be able to transact out.
Right. Yeah, it's a lot of learning needs to happen. But the thing is, this is the kind of learning that you take the time to learn, and then you know it, and you internalize it, and you avoid those costly mistakes, right? This is like core life learning, right? How to handle money and how to handle your assets. So it's definitely worth it. I'm still on that path. Anyway, I'll report as I do my research here about how to secure things. I like the idea of having a company helping me with it. But AC, what do you think? Probably for most normies, aren't they just going to want to like hire a company to handle it for them? I know that goes against self-custodying your Bitcoin, right? But
you know,
I don't know.
I think that's like it depends. That's too difficult to answer in the general case for all people. I think there are going to be people who have studied Bitcoin and want to do self-custody. And there are also people who, on the other end of the spectrum, they're aware of Bitcoin and they are not willing to learn. And they're probably going to take the easiest of the easy buttons and buy the ETF. And then everybody kind of falls in between, you know, those two along the spectrum.
Right. All right. Well, we're getting close to the end here. This has been great, but I'm curious if you guys think, are we going to hit a new all-time high this weekend? I want everybody to write in the chat, write your prediction in the chat. I'm going to write mine right now. You know, I smoke too much hopium. I mean, I don't know what else to say. Is that a bad thing? No, anyway, I'm saying yes. I'm saying this weekend we might creep up. What do you think, AC?
I think no.
Okay.
You know, it's a long weekend. Stock markets, at least in the U.S., aren't open today. Bitcoin is trading 24/7, 365. Doesn't care about the stock markets. It's a holiday. People are spending time, or it's a holiday for a lot of people, depending on their religion. People are trying to spend time with family and friends. There's probably a lot of, you know, conflicting priorities. So I don't think we hit an all-time high this weekend. And I hope we don't, because I need to stack more sats.
So, there we go.
Let's keep it low.
Nick also says no. All right. You know, you guys, you got to get on this hopium thing, man. I was going to say, if you're really brave in chat, take a guess at the highest price this weekend, the exact price. But anyway, we could play funny games. It's all for fun. You know, definitely we try to have fun, but we know it's not all about the price. It's about much more than price, although price is a part of it. So, all right, AC, any last thoughts before we end this panel? Any other questions, by the way, from the chat?
While we wait for questions, you know, I'll kind of stick to the trend that I've said for quite a while, and that's get off zero knowledge and study Bitcoin. You know, it has the potential to change so many things beyond just number go up that it's, I think it's important for people to start to understand the underlying protocol, the network, as well as the asset. And then additionally, I think it's important for people to educate the next generation, not just on Bitcoin, but on how the fiat system is manipulated and designed to steal from the people. So get off zero knowledge, study Bitcoin.
There you go. Study Bitcoin. We should start a some sort of a fractal academy or something. But Joe says 70,777. I like that. BTC Moon Guy is throwing 78,000. Let's go. Oh my God. And Johnny B, of course, 69,420, which I thought was our old all-time high forever. But on Coinbase, it was 69 even. Was it on another exchange that we hit 69,420 in 2021?
Maybe. I don't remember. I know that across different exchanges, there's a little bit of a spread opportunity mm-hmm. for arbitrage. So it depends on who you think is, you know, that the most accurate.
Right. Well, there you go. AC should consider stacking today. I stacked some yesterday, and I guess my wife saw it, and she's like, oh, I saw that you did. I'm like, hey, you got to stack while you can, right? What do they say? Make hay while the sun shines or something? Is that a quote? I don't know.
She'll thank you later.
I don't know quotes. All right, AC, where can people find you?
I think you'll have links set up in the comments or in the description, but I'm active on LinkedIn and Twitter, so people can find me there.
Sweet. Yeah, and you can find Fractal Bitcoin everywhere. The links will be below, but thanks, everybody. Any last questions before we end this panel? In fact, I have an idea for next week's panel, because I think next week's panel is going to be the last one before BitBlock Boom. And I'm thinking maybe we should do a preview of BitBlock Boom. Maybe we should invite a bunch of the speakers, maybe even some of the staff, maybe even Gary Leland himself. Let's get them all on the panel next week and hype this thing, right? I don't know. I'll think about it.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Johnny B.
You should also consider doing like another live stream from BitBlock Boom. I think that would be awesome.
Yeah, that might be possible, because I'm actually using this little laptop to stream. It's a newer one. I just bought it like literally 3 months ago. But yeah, BTC Moon Guy says that'd be cool. Yeah. All right. So that's it. Let's end it here. Thank you, everybody. Don't forget to subscribe to the channel, Fractal Bitcoin, and follow us on Rumble. I'm so happy when I receive positive comments from you guys. And I also, let me show you guys this, because, you know, yeah, here we go. This is, you guys need to see this, okay? This is funny. Here we go. Idiots commenting, provide endless entertainment, LOL. This person on YouTube says, you are too old for this. Oh, that is so good. No, like, really, this is entertainment for me. I'm so happy. Like, I think if I was maybe 20 years younger, I might take offense to stuff like that. But I don't care anymore. Like, I just...
Would they say the same thing to Max Kaiser? Didn't think so.
That's right. We should get him next week. All right. All right. Thanks, AC. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you for Monday's Bitcoin news video. Nick says, let's go. Let's go. All right. See you guys. Thanks for watching.